fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
It's a happy hump day for everybody except poor Lois Lerner. Why don't people just get off her back? The poor woman has the worst luck. Her email crashed, and shortly after, termites infected her hard drive. So it and all the information requested of her that she wanted to comply with was lost. And doggone it, she accidentally erased her phone and Bluetooth records right around the same time. Like Obama said, there's not one scintilla of evidence she or his White House did anything wrong. But this is from the guy who's getting ready to use his magic power pen to sign onto an immigration policy that can only be described as anarchy. We are not anarchists. We are the American Adversaries at Drive Time on AM 660. The Answer and the Mercury Free Studio. Lair Adams here to introduce our anti-anarchist host, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thank you, Lair Adams, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us. Yeah, there's not one scintilla of evidence because they have destroyed it all, along with her BlackBerry telephone. All right, folks, welcome to the show. That's right. It is Drive Time, and you are listening to the American Adversaries on AM 660, The Answer. And, indeed, we are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studio. And don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dentistry, call Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. And we got a big show lined up for you tonight. And if you'd like to join us on the air, feel free to call us at 407-774-3399. 48255. That was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. And in the studio with us tonight, we got a full house. We have our man Aubrey Kahn, Firm Foundation Home Inspections, one of our sponsors. Hey, Aubrey, thank you for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
And we also have Mara Lee of Vacation Travel Planners, who's over here. She's doing the applause section over here.
Hi, guys.
There you go. She's going to be telling us about some great new specials Vacation Travel Planners has dug up for you guys out there here in just a few minutes. We also have back in the studio with us today Dr. Pat Desert. And Dr. Desert has been spending the last few months over in Singapore, and he's got some interesting things to tell us, don't you, sir?
We do. That's right. Good to be back.
Man, when you go on vacay, you go on vacay.
Say, I couldn't be farther away from Orlando and stay on the planet.
Literally the other side of the world.
Other side.
12-hour time difference. So we'll be talking to him in just a minute. But before we get going too far along, I just want to make a few comments about yesterday's primary. It was the primary, so that's just the warm-up act for the general election. But I would have to say this, that if you are not an incumbent, it didn't look good for you.
Yeah.
I couldn't help as I was watching the returns last night at the Evita Ale House with David Smith and his big group of his followers. As I was watching the results come across, I'm standing there going, my God, all the incumbents are not only winning, but they are winning huge. Did you notice that?
Big margin. Yep.
Yes.
Big
and margin. Every race right across the board, if you were an incumbent, man, it was a big night for you. If you weren't, you were sent home packing early. So all I could think of was Don Orlick's, you know, his slogan for his campaign, just say no to the status quo.
Yeah.
Well, the public said resoundingly last night, just say yes to the status quo. Even the referendum amendments, which basically is more of the same stuff.
Yeah.
More big government, like Mayor said yesterday, more tax impositions, overwhelmingly slam dunked. And so In terms of my picks, folks, I hope you didn't put any money on them because you would have lost the whole back. Okay. You would have lost the whole wad, that's for
now,
sure.
Now, Susan Stacy got the majority, but she had to get 51,
right,
didn't she?
So she is now in a runoff with her arch nemesis, if you will, Mitch Krause, who plays dirty ball. You know, let's just say he plays real hardball politics. Is not afraid to, you know, tweak noses and get down in the mud and the dirt. Susan Stacy still has a battle to go. But I was sad to see Fritz Seide did not make it.
Yeah.
David Smith, after the show yesterday, Larry and I both looked at each other and said, if David wins tonight, would be totally shocked. We did not think he was going to win. But nonetheless, and I talked to David after the results last night, and then everybody called the election for Micah. I talked to David, and he fully well understood that this was not a problem. This was not the end goal, that this was part of the process.
Exactly. I'm glad he's looking at it that way.
Yeah, and so he's thinking ahead, and he's going to be back on the show. He's not going away. I was sad to see that Terry Seafelt did not win, although I was sort of elated to see that Jennifer Sullivan won in place of Terry Seafelt. If I did not vote for Terry, I would have voted for Jennifer. Even though she's only 23 years old, she is a firebrand, and she will give Democrats and Republicans alike heartburn up in Tallahassee. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
She really pulled in the youth vote on that one.
Well, not only that, but you know, there's a lot of retirees in Lake County, and she would have had to get a lot of that vote as well. I just want to read something that Don Orlick posted on his Facebook page today. He emailed me this morning and thanked us. You know, we're just doing what we think to do right here, but we appreciate his gratitude. But I just want to, because I think this pretty well sums it up, what happened yesterday. And so he said, this is Don Orlick. He said, I thought I would be upset watching the returns, but I wasn't. Micah trounced all of us. I overestimated the public's desire for change, and I underestimated voter apathy and what it would take to overcome an incumbent. After 22 years, Micah knows how the game is played. And we've talked about that on the show, not necessarily about him, but over and over again. Also, he said, at the Orange County Young Republicans Hobnob earlier in the campaign, a young man stopped by my table. He had a Micah sticker on his jacket. I challenged him to tell me why he supported Micah. He said, because he brought the VA hospital to town, he brought light rail and money to expand the airport. I asked him, is that what a congressman is supposed to do, bring part of our money home? He gave me a confused look and then walked away. It appears the young man was right, and that is what a congressman is supposed to do. I have no regrets. It was great meeting the different candidates as we waved signs together, especially the judge candidates. My daughter said, Dad, at least now you can say I fought for this country. Thanks to those that helped the campaign, now back to the status quo. And that's why it is back to the status quo.
Right.
And Pat Desert, you've been in Singapore, but...
Sounds like a conversation we would have up in Chicago.
I was going to less than 20% turnout for this election. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And you think of the people that have fought and died for the right to vote, and then it's just totally ignored.
It's
sobering.
It very much is, and I think that's exactly what Don was expressing there, the sobering thought that so many people just didn't even care to pay any attention. I will say this, though. I kind of didn't have the feeling that it was ever really a campaign because the local media did not cover it like it could have been covered. The newspapers, there were no challenges, no debate forums set up that would put pressure on the candidates to debate. The fact that you could get several people out to vote, several thousand people out to vote for you at all was a bit of a miracle.
That's the thing about democracy, right? You get the government you deserve.
And that's exactly right. And that's my point, ultimately, is that we are getting what we deserve. If we complain about the status quo, you got to get up and do something about it. You just can't sit still. And this is why I expressed admiration for Don Orlick when some people called when he was on the show saying, you could be the deciding factor.
Yeah, why are you taking votes away from from Smith.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is at least he was out there and he was in the fight.
Sure. And like he didn't take enough away from Smith to make a difference.
And he did get up, like his daughter said, and he fought for his country. And not everybody's going to be victorious, and we know that, you know. And so that's all part of the process. But you have to be a participant, folks, to make all of this work. Now, the general election is coming up here in a couple of months, and I don't expect the turnout to be a whole lot better. I mean, in terms of raw numbers and percentages, it will, just by the nature of it. But I still think it's going to be a very low turnout in term of midterm elections, and that's going to bode well for all of the incumbents, Democrats and Republicans alike. Pat, you can concur on that?
You know, my uncle was a register of deeds in Detroit, and in the primaries, he would see if he was going to get challenged. His name was Youngblood, big yeah. German contingent. So if a guy ran and his name was Drenikowski, he'd get two of his friends that worked for him that were Polish to get on the ballot to split that vote up.
Yeah.
And so the games that are played in the primary, it's really sad, but it is about, you know, just jockeying, and the incumbents have a huge advantage, which you saw, and hopefully that the right people get voted in. And it's hard to unseat incumbents.
They already have their machine in place, right. You know, just to carry
their
on
money,
and keep carrying
their organization,
on.
Right? They turn the vote out.
Things like this are probably the best arguments for term limits, aren't they, Aubrey?
Yeah. Well, I've been pushing term limits for a long time.
I know you have, yeah.
And I'm not going to stop.
Now you have another reason why we should have them.
You know, the apathy is of the voters, it's truly disgraceful.
But I got a question. Do they really want the voter turnout? Because are the polls left open long enough? I mean, you could vote online. You could vote on your phone. I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities in this democracy with the technology to increase voter turnout. So the question becomes, because the incumbents control this, do they really want the voters to turn out, or do they want to keep control of it in the primary?
Well, you remind me of something we talked about briefly on the show Monday, because John Micah, one of the congressional candidates here, had sent a very negative mailing flyer out mm-hmm. to, you know, the voters in his district against his main rival, David Smith, just days before the election. And obviously, it wasn't meant to motivate his voters to get out. Mm-hmm. It was meant to, exactly like yes. you said, suppress the vote. Because you're right, the incumbents don't want a big turnout, because it's a wild card when you have one.
And if they're worried their district is slipping away from them, they'll redefine the districts. There's just too many tricks to play, to gerrymander, whatever, to make sure, and you see it,
we're putting up with that now.
Right here. That's the ugly part, isn't it?
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to have some more encouraging news, if you will, how they do things on the other side of the planet.
That's right.
Which maybe we should be looking toward to figure out how we can get ourselves back righted up straight.
You didn't dig a hole, did you? I mean, to come.
Thinking about it.
Okay.
Well, no, that's what the United States is doing.
There you
Sounds
go.
Like they dug a hole
we'll
here.
Be right back.
Yeah.
Oh, Hamas.
A little of the good, bad, the ugly for you.
Yeah, that was Aubrey Kahn and I singing.
Yeah.
And the chorus there, too.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries. And the candidates may be taking a few days off, but we don't. No rest for the weary, so we are still here for you. 407-774-8255 is the number. We got a caller on the line right now. We'll take that call, and then we're going to talk to Dr. Pat Desert about how they do things in Singapore. And it might sound familiar, like maybe we used to do things like that here. But first of all, Sixto, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there.
Gentlemen, it's great to speak to you.
Thank you.
I worked at one of the polls in a local area yesterday as a equipment AccuVote technician.
Okay.
And, you know, you were lucky if maybe over 100 people, you know, came in that area. And you know what I understand? Because, you know, we've complained in the past about early voting days, not enough days to vote. In the past, the people complained they were being, you know, not allowed to vote, you know. And I remember, you know, when I was growing up in New York, you know, you voted on that day, you know, and that was it. But, you know, yeah. I think that a lot of people, it's just the apathy, and people saw that their minds are, like they say, they're involved in those machines, and that's their world. And
yeah.
then when something happens, then they complain, but by then it's too late. You've elected somebody like a Grayson, you know, you voted in somebody like this comedian up in Minnesota.
Frank
Alfred.
You know,
yeah.
I forgot his name, but, you know, until people start, you know, taking this serious –
Yeah, well,
it could be run by the 5 or 10% that do come out to vote.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But
I was reading in California, they're talking about paying people to come out and vote. and so the thought occurred to me, 6-0, you, I'm wondering what you think about this, is if everybody got a scratch-off lottery ticket that voted, do you think that would increase turnout?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
How much would that really cost to produce a scratch-off lottery ticket to get a chance?
Yeah, but a lot of candidates are the same way. It's like getting a scratch-off ticket. You vote for them, you don't know what you get.
You're right, it's a gamble anyway.
And real quick, you know, incumbents and all that, I understand that sometimes you have somebody in it, but after a while, you need a fresh look. You need a different perspective.
Yeah.
Especially if nothing's gotten done, bring somebody in there that's younger, has got a different look on things, has been through more than what these guys did. I mean, you guys have been in there 60 years. I mean, John McCain has been in there since he came home from Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, you got people that have been there forever, and you're never going to get a change or any movement on what we the people want until you start getting people in there.
Yeah, well,
people are scared to run too. They're afraid they're going to get dragged through the dirt.
Yeah, well, that's true. You're absolutely right about that. But I think a lot of it has to do with the power of the incumbency, and they certainly have stacked the rules in their favor.
So in South Carolina, Strom Thurmond runs until he's over 100.
Yeah.
He's totally has no facilities.
Like 60 years or so long.
And he was the only guy that had Civil War veterans actually vote for him. it's true. And so at the end, his wife was standing him up in front of videos, making him say, if I die, she can take my seat.
Yeah.
Because he had no idea. And they still would vote for him. They'd still vote the old man in.
Yeah. So.
You know, and a guy like Colonel Smith, real quick, you know, I mean, he didn't get a chance to debate. I mean, I voted for him. But, you know, when you control, you've been there and the media is going for you because all the stuff you brought in, you know, and I'm thankful for what Congressman Micah has done. But, you know, Congress is not moving. The government's not moving. So you can bring back home whatever you want. But if the whole nation as a whole is going backwards, it doesn't matter what you bring into your neighborhood because eventually that catches up to your neighborhood and your state also.
That's right.
That's a great setup for Singapore.
All right, 6-0.
Have a great day, and thanks again for what you guys do out there.
All right, yeah, we appreciate you calling. We appreciate you calling out there. Let's start the discussion about Singapore. Michael, we're going to come to you here in just a minute. But
so one of the things I was surprised when I went to Singapore, and if you don't know it, it is a democracy at the tip of Malaysia. It's got the Indian Ocean on one side and the Pacific Ocean on the other. So it's a little island that's a home of, and it's built very vertically up because it's very small space, very no resources at all. And it's one of the biggest economies in the world. Now, what makes the biggest economy? The government sets goals out and hits goals. So one of Singapore's problems is very small land, millions of people. They decide that they're water dependent on Malaysia. So every time there's a dust up, Malaysia cuts their water off and they suffer. So Singapore sets a goal out to say we're going to be water independent by 2020. They have blocked off the only river they've got that has brackish water, trying to get that to run clean. They're spending billions of dollars in desalination research. Forward-looking. They're not pressed right now to do this. But their government has the leaders and thought leaders to put them in a position to succeed going forward. So they've got billions of dollars being spent on desalination research for the good of the whole country. Now, in the U.S., I keep thinking as I'm watching this, that when half of the people were dead from dehydration and there were no cattle left and there were no crops left,
then
somebody might say, you know, we should do something as long as it's in my district and I can bring that money back to me and help me get reelected.
Yeah.
And these guys are out there doing the right things for the whole community. And that's why it grows.
But what about that poor little fish it might suck up in there?
Yeah, you know, when you see some of the stuff that gets eaten out there,
they just put it on a dinner table.
Yeah, I've been on rice and fish heads for 8 weeks, and I've lost 25 pounds. So
all right, we're going to continue this conversation, but I want to go to Michael, who's been holding before we go to the break. Michael, thank you for being there.
Hey guys, as far as the Singapore thing, he's exactly right. They've got one thing over there we don't have anymore.
What's that?
Statesman. We've got politicians. We don't have statesmen. Our statesmen are extinct.
That's right. That's right. And that's one of the things you see.
The problem with our apathy at the polls is the elections are too long and the campaigns are too negative. And, you know, if you can't decide on who you want to vote for in 2 weeks, you shouldn't be voting.
Well, you, I think you're right, especially with the voting being, I think it's made too easy for people. I would rather see one election day and make it be a holiday. So that the primary day and the general election day, everybody gets off. It's the only it's the only day to vote. I think that that would be a way to encourage turnout. Could be dead wrong. You know, when people don't care, I guess they don't care any day of the week.
And permanent ink in your finger when you vote. So you can't vote
more
than
once. How about a tax deduction as an incentive?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
tax credit.
Yeah, I understand, but I hate that we begin to think of those monetary type incentives when this is a great privilege that we should enjoy. I mean, my God, think of how many people in history never even came close to having a say as to who their leader would be. Live their lives in slavery. And here we have the great opportunity every 2 years, a couple of times every 2 years, and we can't get up and get out and do it? Give me a break.
Yeah, but Dr. Pat's idea of the scratch-off was good, too.
But, you know, the other thing is...
it's still a gamble, yeah.
If you want to give people tax credits or pay them to come and vote, then it's going to be a race again because one party's going to promise, if you vote for us... we'll give you even more money or a bigger tax.
Oh, that doesn't happen now?
Yeah, well, also I think that what happened yesterday is it is a sign of not just apathy. That's a big part of it, too, but I think also of disgust. Voter disgust with the people that we have running, and they just discount everything. They're just throwing the baby out with the bathwater and saying, look, I'm just sick and tired of this. I'm just not going to participate in this. And it's a bit more, I believe, of a conscious decision rather than just simply not caring, not paying attention at all. And I don't think, as I said, that bodes well necessarily for anybody but the incumbents this fall. And so don't look for huge changes in the Senate. If the Republicans manage to get a majority, I don't think it will be a big one. The signs are just not there unless something changes dramatically, and I don't foresee that happening. And by the way, the Democrats are outraising the Republicans in money right now. So when it comes down to that, they're going to have an advantage. We'll be right back.
Well, I was rolling down the road in some cold blue steel.
Here is tonight's American Adversaries Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Today's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Hart for SoundbiteRx.com, sponsored by My Liberty Threads. Once again, going to give you a quick rundown of what's brand new today at SoundbiteRx.com. Jim Webb, you remember him? The senator from, I believe he was from Tennessee or Kentucky. Well, he is now making noise criticizing Hillary and Obama. Is he perhaps setting up a presidential run for himself? Look out if he does. He would be a very strong Democratic candidate. Also this, brand new today at SoundbiteRx.com. You know, Chuck Todd, the NBC political analyst, he now is criticizing President Obama about his vacations. Folks, when MSNBC and NBC are criticizing you and you're a liberal, that's never good news. Also this, Libya, you thought that was in the past? No, that is a mess that's going to be a bigger mess and be a part of the rest of the mess that we now know as the Middle East. And that you can find that at soundbiterx.com. And once again, somebody out there promoting Mitt Romney to run again. Who knows? Maybe it'll be Romney versus Webb. I don't know. And also this. This is a sarcastic article about President Obama from, guess what, a left-winger. And there's another great article by Cornell West. All brand new today at soundbiterx.com. Please go there, folks. It's good medicine. We'll be right back. Back by popular demand. The Dumb and the Feckless. Today, brought to you by Daniel Harper from his book, Clinton Inc.
They were careless people, Tom and Daisy. They smashed up things and creatures and then retreated back into whatever it was that kept them together and let other people clean up the mess they had made.
That was F. Scott Fitzgerald. Hillary Rodham Clinton was all smiles as she stood on a Pentagon stage in early 2013. buoyant, almost girlish. She was rocking a shapeless deep red blazer with a Peter Pan collar and four large black buttons as she prepared to take part in another moment of Clinton myth-making. It was the kind of exquisite brand reinvention and choreographed stagecraft that had been a Clinton hallmark since their first campaign for national office in 1992. Beside her was the colorless General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and Leon Panetta, Barack Obama's jovial Secretary of Defense. Dressed in a dark suit with a blue-gray tie, Panetta had extolled the former First Lady in ways that might make even the most studied Clintonite blush. Panetta bestowed upon her the Distinguished Civilian Service Award, the Pentagon's highest honor, and then dropped a little news to the reporters gathered. In many ways, I have to tell you, it was her inspiration that encouraged me to move forward, to be able to bring down the last barriers for women in the Department of Defense and to give them the ability to have a chance to engage in combat. He turned to a beaming Hillary. I thank you for that inspiration. However, contrary to Secretary Panetta's assertion on stage that February, national security policy in the Obama administration was not managed by the Department of Defense or the State Department, for that matter, a source of enormous frustration for Secretary Clinton as well as Panetta and his predecessor, Robert Gates, who in his 2013 memoir noted that Obama's White House was by far the most centralized and controlling national security of any I had seen since Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger ruled the roost. Instead, as Gates and other sources within the State Departments have noted, all major foreign policy matters were debated and decided among a small group of Obama loyalists at the White House who lacked much, if any, substantive national security experience and operated almost totally through a political lens. Also, contrary to Panetta's boastful assertion, the controversial decision to place women into combat roles was not made as some homage to Hillary Clinton. Indeed, it really had nothing to do with either Mr. Panetta or Mrs. Clinton, for that matter. In 2013, the primary focus of the Obama National Security Council was political. National security sources have told me, reclaiming the House of Representatives in the 2014 midterm congressional elections is the goal. Losing the House to the Republicans in 2010 was an embarrassment to the Obama team. Obama's Women in Combat initiative was conceived to ensure that social issues remained front and center in the news. Moreover, women on the front lines would create a compelling visual as Obama Democrats continued to defend against the so-called war on women, a rallying cry in the 2012 election that sent single female voters to the polls in overwhelming numbers for the Democratic Party. Far more interesting about the Pentagon's ceremony that day was not, however, what was said on the platform, but the set of questions surrounding it. Those that few asked aloud. To hear some of those questions, tune in tomorrow for more of The Dumb and the Feckless, the true story of Clinton, Inc., as told by Daniel Halper in his new book. So once again, thanks, folks, for the request to bring back The Dumb and the Feckless, and we hope you enjoyed it again today. I want to go back to Dr. Pat Desert, first of all, the economy in Singapore is booming.
It's booming.
And you say that 2.8% growth over there is not enough. Yeah. I mean, that would seem miraculous here given this recovery, but over there it's not enough.
Right. And so you know, economic numbers come out here and they get spun. You know, the jobs report, he's underreporting, they're overreporting, and everything gets spun.
Right.
Over there, the prime minister of the country came out right before I left and apologized because the growth was only 2.8%, and they were shooting for over 3% for the second quarter, for the quarter, not for the year, for the quarter.
Right.
And he said that it was our bad. We'll fix this. There was no finger pointing. It was the minority. It was a monsoon. No,
you people didn't work hard enough.
You didn't people there. It was the blame is here. It's like, you know, the buck stops here. And it was like, okay, here we go. We're going to fix this. because they want to get over 11% for the year.
Wouldn't that be refreshing, folks, to have our leaders come out and apologize for the lousy damn job that they know they've been doing?
Right. They know they're doing it. They all know what to do, but instead of apologizing, they point fingers and blame. And that's what does not happen there.
And they say we need to grow government so that we can fix it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But over there, they're not growing the government. They're growing that economy over there via free market capitalism.
Free market. It is literally, they've taken our lessons that built us, and they're applying them, and they're killing it. So I have a friend who works at a bank. He's a vice president for a bank. And to be a platinum member, an elite member, you've got to have so much asset in the bank. And I said, wow, the number's high. You have to have $350,000 to be considered in the top, preferred customer in the bank.
Right.
That's a lot higher than over in the United States. And he said, you don't understand. 70% of the people in this bank have $2.5 million or more of assets in our bank. 70%. So if that's a sample of the population, you're talking about this working and building affluence throughout the country. When they go to and the things they do, they set rules down and they apply them and they follow them. So being an economist, and I've been on the show before talking about the University of Chicago economists,
where you have your degree.
Where I got my degree, and one of the economists, Gary Becker, said in the United States, he's a Chicago Nobel laureate in economics. Said one of the problems in the United States is crime is so high because the reward versus the risk, you don't get punished high enough, so people are willing to take the risk.
And the reward
So it's just supply and demand, basically. Yeah, yeah, I'll give it a shot because if I get slapped on the wrist, I go to jail for a couple of months and I'm out.
Right.
Over there, things like drugs. So if you get caught with a third of a gram of narcotics, it's a capital crime.
Capital offense.
They'll kill you. And so a guy came over the Malaysian checkpoint on his little moped, and he had drugs tucked up under the seat cushion. They caught him. They asked two questions. Is this your bike, and were you driving? And they already knew the answer to both.
Sure.
3 days later, dead.
Wow.
So what do you think the incidence of drug in that part of the economy going towards drugs is in Singapore? It's negligible. They follow the rule. They set rules down, and you break the rules, you pay. And we've walked away from that.
And when it comes to the economy, they incentivize things, but they don't control things, so to speak.
Right. So we were talking about that at the break, and as a non-Singaporean, I can find a grant from the government if you're going to employ Singaporeans. So for me, if I want to set up a company, which I am, I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
And you can get a grant from the government starting out at about $500,000. To build a company to employ Singaporeans. So they will do everything they can to promote business in the economy and provide Singaporeans opportunity. Now, if you don't take the opportunities, that's your fault. So it's not providing, it's not giving you fish. It's literally teaching you how to fish, which is appropriate for an island nation. But the idea here is that it's about growing the economy and the government putting all the pieces in place to attract economy and to make it flourish.
Create the environment for the free market to thrive.
That's
they're
correct.
Like providing a little bit of fertilizer, priming it, more
exactly
or less.
Right, and doing everything they can to make it succeed. And it is.
Absolutely. By the way, real quickly, and I want to bring Nasir Dennis in on this, what is the corporate tax rate there? Do you know?
I don't know. Right. I have to be honest with you, the tax.
It's my understanding that it's pretty low.
It's very low. I don't know the exact number.
Almost non-existent.
And so prices are high. And of things because many of the commodities and stuff are flown in. But
because Singapore does not have any natural resources.
It is no issues. There's right. no beef is, I mean, there's beef in some places. It's like $55 a pound at the grocery store.
Right.
Beer is $9 a glass. We went. I mean, it's great walking into a grocery store and seeing a case of beer for $45. back to the economy and the booming economy, it's all back to what they'll pay. And so,
well, how many people are homeless there or on welfare?
Well, there's no welfare.
There's no welfare.
You're talking about something. Their families take care of them, which is what the intention was, which is what we were before Social Security. Your family would take care of you.
All right. Well, speaking of families and welfare, I want to bring in Nasir Dennis. And Nasir Dennis, you wanted to say something first about the primary, and then you know the story I'm aiming at here with the families and welfare.
Yeah, but let me jump in and ask Pat two questions.
Sure.
Two important questions. Number one, is English pretty prevalent over in Singapore?
Yes, there's four national languages. English is one of them and by far the most spoken. All the signs are in English. It is easy to go over there and speak English. Now, you have to understand that when people speak English, that doesn't mean everyone understands the same.
Okay.
So we have Aubrey sitting across here. He's from South Africa, and he speaks English, but I know darn well that he doesn't really know what he's talking about. But we all speak English.
Thanks, Dr. Pat.
Question two. Could they use a good political talk show over there?
I push you guys, man. I got it, you know, on the radio. We're trying to do that.
Maybe we get one of those grants and employ some Singaporeans to, man the station.
Yeah, but I'm not
translate
sure.
For
we'll
us.
Have, we'll have
now,
come
John, over and be the station.
I'm not sure there's I'm not sure there's a lot to talk about here, really, because it's like, man, they only got 2.8% growth. How dare they show their hands?
Really,
how show their face of embarrassment?
We won't have anything to complain about.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll suffer the occasional caning if I say the wrong thing.
Real quick, you wanted to say something about the primary, and then I want to go with that welfare story.
Yeah, I'm kind of going to echo what Don Ulrich said to us in an email he sent to us today. He took a thrashing. So did all of your candidates, Crick, took a thrashing yesterday. But you know what? He said the people have spoken. And if you look at the numbers and look how low the turnout was in the Mike election in particular, he got something like 73% of the vote.
72 plus.
72 out of only 20% of voters cast.
Right.
That means 86% of registered voters in his district think the status quo is okay.
Yeah.
So I guess they said yes to the status quo, and I went through the five stages of grief pretty quickly. from the anger to the bargaining to the depression, and I think I'm up to acceptance now. That it's time to move on to the next fight.
Yeah, well, a couple of Heinekens helped me soothe the pain a little bit last night. But I couldn't help but think, as I was thinking about that low turnout, as I was driving home last night, one of the cable channels is running a Simpsons marathon.
Yeah.
And I caught one of the first episodes of the Simpsons, the one where Marge goes after cartoon violence. And she has a letter-writing campaign, and the producer first, blows her off. She's just a screwball. And then he gets these tons of letters on his desk, and then he goes to his assistants, "The screwballs have spoken."
Frosty the Clown Show ends up being the lowest rated show ever because without violence, cartoons aren't fun.
All right. Now, once again, though, that story about welfare. Over there, they don't have welfare. They don't.
It's a different system.
Exactly. People's families take care of one another. Mm-hmm. Tell us about welfare and families in this country.
My goodness. How does the number 110 million sound? That's a one and seven zeros after it. That's how many Americans now live in households that receive some form of mean-tested welfare benefit from the federal government. They may not be specifically welfare families, but they do receive cash benefits from the government. According to the report from the Census Bureau last week, that is the highest absolute number in American history. Even the Great Depression didn't get that bad. And it represents 35.4% of the American population. More than one out of every three Americans lives in a welfare household today.
Well, I've got news for you. It's not going to get better until Obama gets booted.
Well, Obama and the progressive policies that he forces on us.
And that's what I'm bringing up with Singapore, and that's why I wanted to come in and talk about it, is the results are there. The numbers are there.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. What works is what you're talking about. You've got a country over there that's killing it economically, that's been killing it. They've been in existence for 49 years. Go look at them. Go study them. They've got the application of free market economics, and they're just booming. The problem they have in growth is they can't find qualified people to fill the jobs. So you've got companies over there looking to staff up, and the guy that comes over there, they can't find enough of them.
Do they have a Social Security system?
Not as we know it. Not as we know it. It's a different. You've got a lot. There's a big expat community, and so there are. For us, as Americans, we pay world tax, but not every country pays world tax. I've got friends over there from England, and they're not paying tax back there. They're paying a little Singaporean tax, which is low, and life is good.
What does the media over there say about the United States of America? Because obviously they see what's going on over here, and compared to what's going on over there, are they just laughing at us?
There is a very high regard to the United States, to the United States products, to the United States people. You'd be surprised. There's no animosity And
but do they wonder sometimes what in the world?
But what they wonder is, you know, we talk about it, they say, and they believe this. They say, I've talked to some friends over there and some acquaintances I made, and they said, what we don't understand is we have the same rules and we enforce them, and you walk away from them. You don't. Why don't you guys just enforce the rules and do the stuff we're doing? They just don't understand. And that's a very good question, I think. It's a question I think you answer every day, right? Why do we even do this? Because we ignore the laws. We you know, this guy that had the Singapore, that had the drugs that they found, was going to capital punishment. There was the law. You broke it. 3 days. There was no death row for 18 years. There was no appeals. There was the law. Here's the punishment. You're going to get it. And it was over. So, you know, say you've got the same rules and you don't use them. And so that's sort of an interesting, there's no way to describe that back. So, yeah. You know, being compassionate and everything, but in some sense, it's a sort of, you know, it makes you weaker in some sense. If you give everybody everything, you know, eventually get weaker.
It's like raising a child.
Exactly right.
If you do everything for the child, literally, the child never gets any strength, can never make a decision for itself. I mean, you have to allow the child to stand up on his own, and that means fall down flat on his face every now and then, or her face.
This is a discussion around the desert dinner table every night. And I pound my daughter to learn math. I've done it since she's been 4. Now she's 13, and she went to the school and took a placement test. And she came out and said, "No, Daddy, I failed." And she didn't understand one. I said, "Well, Paris, you know, you're not going to know everything because they're trying to figure out how far you know math." So right. I didn't show you that. And we went in to get it to get her scheduled, and she was in the math plus class. She was in the advanced class, and she was thrilled. So all the fighting and all the anger and all the stuff all paid off when she achieved. And even mom turned to me and said, "Well, you did it. You said you would, and by God, you did it. And I thought it would never happen, but I'm."
Yeah,
she said, "You're right," which, of course, you know, I had to say, "Well, can you say that again from a microphone? I'm going to make that my ringtone."
let's note the date and time, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're noting the time, and we are short. We got to go take a break, but we'll come back, and we'll be joining you. And Mary Lee is going to join us as well to tell you about some great new deals at Vacation Travel Planners. So please stay with us. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries. It is Drive Time on AM 660. The answer, 407-774-8255 is the number. You better call right now, though, because we're running out of time really rapidly. And I've got Mary Lee in the studio. But before we get to her, I want to just go back to Pat real quick. Pat, first of all, you're the founder of Junto X. How's that coming along?
Junto X is clicking along. We're having success. In fact, it's going to get picked up by the American Singapore Chamber of Commerce.
Excellent.
So we're excited about that.
Excellent. So, folks, listen to the commercials. Go to juntox.com. Mm-hmm. That's juntox.com. Also, you are starting up a company in Singapore?
Yeah, I did something for my class. I'm a professor in entrepreneurship out at UCF. Yeah. And rather than talk about simulations and read from books, I just thought, you know, let's build a class. I mean, let's build a company. And so I'm building a company online with a set of podcasts, and we just launched it. It's going to get better. And it's at dumbventures.com, just like it sounds, dumbventures.com. Myself and a partner up in Michigan who makes Corvettes are going to build products, and we're going to take people's eyes and ears around the globe. We're going to Thailand, Bali, Taiwan, Singapore, of course, Las Vegas, Detroit, Orlando.
Yeah.
And the idea is here's how you build a company. So if anybody wants to watch us do this and sort of build some experience and some sense and maybe overcome any fears they have to take that big jump, go ahead, dumbventures.com. Take a look. Send me an email if you want to. I think it's going to be pretty interesting. So,
all right. And you're going back to Singapore here real shortly.
Yeah, a couple of days, yeah.
But then you'll be back again.
Yeah, we'll be back. Yeah,
so when you come back, we'll talk more Singapore.
And, yeah.
See if they get back. If they can struggle to get up over that 2.8%.
Yeah, I'm
going to
see if I can get Nostradamus a job out there. I got a mission now. I'm going to try to hook them up with a radio station.
Hey, that wouldn't be such a dumb venture, would it, Nostradamus?
Oh, I would love that, as long as they can understand my English.
Okay. All right. Hey, you still planning on taking that cruise with your lovely bride?
We're looking towards it, but as you know, I've recently taken on some extra duties outside my day job, so I might not be able to break away for it.
Well, I tell you what, Mary Lee can customize one to you, can't you, Mary Lee?
Absolutely. And, anything for Dennis.
All right. Of course, Mary Lee is with Vacation Travel Planners. And, you know, we're getting started now. Summer will be over here next Monday. By the way, we'll be taking Labor Day off. Officially, it's the end of summer. Well, actually, I guess you could say ceremoniously. Officially, September 21st is the end of summer. But Is that September 21st? Yeah, September 21st. Or is that October 21st? Anyway, you know, the winter solstice.
September.
Something like that. Anyway, the autumnal solstice. But it's getting to be gift-giving time, right? And planning for those winter vacations, and there's no better way to do that than with a cruise. Right, Marilee?
That's correct.
So give us some specials you got coming up.
Well, how about a Thanksgiving Day week cruise?
A week-long cruise?
Yeah. Ooh.
Where to and when and how much? Well, I know when, but well, where and how much?
Caribbean for like $299 per, starting at $299 per person.
Wow.
For the whole week?
Yeah, for a six-night cruise.
Now, do they have a special Thanksgiving dinner on the cruise?
They usually do. Yes, they do.
And do I have to dress like a pilgrim?
You mean you wouldn't be the turkey?
I have a pilgrim's hat, so maybe. Well, we'll talk about that later.
As long as you don't dress like an Indian and wear one of them little loincloths, we'll be all right with it.
Well,
what else you got over there, Marilee?
Well, Bahama cruises still coming in at like $119 per person.
Wow.
For a 3 or 4 night Bahama cruise.
Now you get these all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And how much notification? I mean, how much time do you normally have between that deal and when the cruise comes up?
Sometimes I have a couple of weeks, sometimes even a couple of months. So like right now for the fall, great rates, especially for our Florida residents, military, seniors. We're having some great specials coming up for the fall.
You got any cruises going to Singapore?
Actually, there are cruises that go to Singapore.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Hey, maybe we can get on one of those, Nostradamus. We'll stow away in one of the lifeboats or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That Princess Cruises is one of the big ones over there in that area, and they are wonderful because every cruise that Princess does, a military person, whether active or retired, gets an onboard credit.
Yeah.
Every single Princess cruise. They honor their military.
What's your website?
www.vacationtravelplanners.com.
That's real easy, folks. Vacationtravelplanners.com. And go. You're putting up deals every day on your website.
Absolutely.
So just go there, you know, folks. If you're looking for a great cruise, just go there every day until you find the one that you want. Call her up or just do the clicking, and there you'll be.
Yeah, and if they give me a call, I might even tell them how they might even be able to win a seven-night cruise.
Ooh. Win mm-hmm. a seven-night cruise? Win a wow, seven. Sounding better and better.
They get a chit when they vote to get a cruise, and so if the one comes pulled,
there
they
you
get
go.
That.
If you didn't get it yesterday, folks, you missed out.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, Aubrey, there's a great dinner coming up. Is that open to the public, that dinner that you were telling us about?
It's being done through the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce.
I see. Okay.
And they're pretty full right now. Of course, we just booked the table late.
All right. Well, I appreciate that.
And but if you want to go to the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce website, and you can try and book on there if they have any seats available.
And that's
it's on 9/11, and the speaker's going to be John Ashcroft.
Former Attorney General John Ashcroft. All right, that's going to wrap it up for tonight, folks. Night, everybody.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660.